Thank you for getting up early to come see this talk. I am Matthew Scala. This is joint work with three other people from the University of Manitoba, Steph DeRoche, who's a prof there, and Saeed Merabi and Deb Jyoti Mondal, who are both grad students. And my talk is about and I hope you like this sans serif font, because I designed it myself. That's one of the other geometric things I do. The other fonts in the presentation are not mine, though. My talk is about site permutations. Now, this is a sort of a general phrase for a number of different ways that you can describe. One way of thinking of it is describe where you are on the plane as a permutation of some sites. So if you want to navigate, you can think of, well, I've got a few landmarks, and I can describe in terms of numbers where I am relative to the landmarks. I can say, well, the such and such landmark is at this distance and that angle. But what if you have less information than that? What if you don't want to deal with real numbers? Instead, we're going to look at, maybe we have more landmarks, but we only get a permutation of them. So we will have some scheme that maps our location into a permutation of these landmarks. And of course, as soon as we start saying permutations and arrangements, and it digs into all of the combinatorial kinds of things that people like to do with points on the plane. So here is one such scheme. And I'm actually already kind of cheating, because this does not map a point into a permutation. It maps a direction into a permutation. In computational geometry, we're very fond of sweep lines. So this is what we will do. We will have a line that sweeps across the plane in some direction, and then it encounters these points in a particular order. That's the permutation for that direction. Now, one of the things that the combinatorists like to do is look at this for all of the possible directions. You sweep your sweep line direction in a circle around the outside of the plane. You get a sequence of these permutations. Such sequences are called allowable sequences, and there are a whole lot of results in oriented matroid theory, which I'm pleased that it appears some people actually like, that describe the order type of the sites in terms of the allowable sequence of permutations that you get from these sweep lines. Essentially, each sequence going around the circle tells you the order type of these sites. So that's one thing. And an equivalent way of formulating it is to say, well, we're going to take an infinite directed line and project everything onto that line, and then just take the order of the sites along the line, which is really exactly the same ordering. If we are starting from a point, however, here's another way we could do it. We say, I'll start at my point, this greenish one, and then I go out to what's the nearest, what's the second nearest, and the sequence of sites in increasing order of distance. And you can imagine this as being a sort of a sonar thing, or a submarine, and we send out a ping. We hear back the echoes as our circular wavefront encounters all of the landmarks. But we're not going to record the times, as you usually would with sonar. We're only going to record the sequence. Which one did we hear first? So that gives us a permutation. It's easy to think of other ways of coming up with permutations of sites. Here's one, which is actually going to be the main result in this talk, which is if you have a cyclic permutation. And this also has a very natural sort of physical interpretation. I'm going to have a radar scanner with a narrow beam, and I will sweep in a counterclockwise direction and look at the sequence in which my beam, my ray, encounters the sites. So by doing this, because we assume that we don't have an accurate compass or anything, we're not going to get really a permutation. We're going to get a cyclic permutation, an equivalence class of permutations up to rotating. So this will give us some kind of a combinatorial object that tells us where we are. And for all three of those, then we can ask a number of questions. Here's the question that we're most interested in, which is what I call the realization problem. Okay? This is essentially inverting the function. I just described how to go from a direction or a point to having a permutation. Now let's go the other way. We say, here's a permutation, and we know where all the sites are. We don't know where we are. Can we find where we are? Can we do that kind of navigation problem, inverting the function that generates the permutations? Now, obviously, there may be multiple answers, so usually we're just going to say, can we find one? There also may be no answer. It's quite easy to imagine that there can be a permutation that just is not realized at all. So you can treat this as a decision problem of, can we realize this permutation at all? Now, I will mention here, this shouldn't be any big surprise, but we're going to assume a real RAM and general position. Real RAM, I think, is easy to justify. If it's not general position, then you can start getting into some funnier situations that are of interest to combinatorists, but are somewhat less interesting for the particular problem we're looking at. And it's easy to imagine a typical application of this, which might be that we have a map, we have a sensor that actually physically returns one of these permutations. People have built robots that work this way, and then we want to do some sort of navigational tasks within our map. There's a bit of related previous work on each of these schemes and a couple of others. Sweep line permutations, as I mentioned, that's an important combinatorial topic. There's a lot of oriented matroid theory, much of it pioneered by these people, Goodman and Pollock, and that the order type is characterized nicely by the sequence of permutations. Now, distance permutations is actually how I got into it. These were introduced by Chavez, Figueroa, and Navarro as part of a distance-based data structure. If you're trying to build a data structure for doing proximity searches in a metric space that may be high-dimensional, it may have a very expensive metric, you need a very general data structure that doesn't necessarily exploit many geometric properties of the space because you just don't have them. So they built a data structure that was based on computing a permutation like this and then using that to put the points in the structure into bins. And then the hope is that you only have to look in one bin or only a few of the bins to find the points that will answer your query. Measuring how well that approach works somewhat depends on knowing how many bins are there going to be, how evenly distributed will the points tend to be. So I've got some work related to that of counting how many distance permutations are actually realized. One interesting aspect of that is that in a Euclidean space, it's ordered k to the 2d. K is the number of sites, d is the number of dimensions. So on the plane, for instance, you basically only have as many, you're only choosing four sites to describe the whole permutation. With the radial scheme sweeping an array, there's this result here that finds all of them in n to the fourth time, which is interesting because just writing down the answer takes you n to the fifth time. Their clever bit is to express them in such an order that you can then describe each one as the difference from the previous or some previous one in a constant space, and so you get all of the information in less than the explicit size of the answer. And then there's also a paper here that talks about clusters of stars. This is kind of like the radial permutation, but instead of sweeping a ray, you're sweeping a line, which could be directed or undirected. So as you go through an entire circle, you actually hit each site twice, and you only have to write half of that to get the answer. And the idea then is to look at the permutation from each of the sites of all the other sites and reconstruct the combinatorics of the site arrangement. So that is not closely related to what we do, but it's another kind of a neat application of this kind of work. When we start talking about each point has a permutation, then we can say, well, it would be nice to draw a diagram of the entire space and say, what's the permutation? Now, these are fairly basic Voronoi diagrams that are probably quite familiar. This is the simplest kind, just saying what's the closest site from each point. This is what they call a higher order Voronoi diagram, in this case order 2. There's a cell for each set of 2, and it's saying what are the 2 closest. So in this cell, the 2 closest sites are A and B, and in this cell they are B and D, and so on. Now if you take all of the higher order Voronoi diagrams like that and superimpose them, you get something that looks like this. Okay, this has a cell for every permutation. There are 18 of them, even though you can imagine 24 permutations of the sites. And in fact, My earlier work shows that 18 is the number you get, regardless of the arrangement of the sites, at least up to being general position. And you'll note that this is just a bunch of lines. They're no longer segments. And each line is the bisector, the orthogonal bisector. It bisects the segments of two of the sites. So this one is the set of all points equidistant to A and B, which is nice because you can define that without really needing Euclidean geometry. So if you're going to count these cells, then you're going to count how many cells you get by layering up all of those bisectors. Here is what the Voronoi diagram looks like for cyclic permutations. On three sites, you only have two cyclic permutations because you factor out the reorder. I've written them in a canonical form with A at the start. And you can note that these cells, you know, they're not convex. They're not even in one piece. This can potentially get, it seems, very complicated. If you look carefully, you'll note that the bisector, or whatever you want to call it, the thing that separates two cells and corresponds to an adjacent swap in the permutation, the bisector consists of a straight line with a segment cut out in the middle. So this one is between A and C. When you cross this bisector, you are swapping A and C. If you had just two sites, you'd be cutting the plane into one piece with such a bisector, which kind of makes sense because there is really only one cyclic permutation of two sites. But then as soon as you get three or more, you can create a diagram like this. So we are looking at, when we try to realize one of these cyclic permutations, we are looking at trying to find a point in the appropriate cell for the permutation we are realizing. First of all, sweep line permutations. Sweep line, realizing a sweep line permutation, if I give you one and you try to find the direction that gives it, that's really pretty easy. Because what it comes down to is saying that for each, first of all, you only need to look at a linear number of constraints because greater than is a transitive relation. So you say, I'm closer to the first thing than to the second. I'm closer to the second than to the third. Or my sweep line hits the first thing first and the second, and so on. So that just gives me a linear number of constraints. Each one restricts the direction to be in a half circle. Okay, there's a half circle of vectors for which the sweep line will hit the right thing first. So I just take the intersections of all those half circles. Fine. And so it's linear time, and it actually gives you all of the directions, all the answers. It gives you the interval of directions that give you that permutation, if any. Realizing distance permutations, at least in the Euclidean context, is not too hard either, because those bisectors are just linear constraints. And again, you've got a linear number of them, so you just have to do linear programming. And a feasible solution to the LP problem is the answer to the realization problem. And it's kind of nice that that also works in arbitrary dimension. We have this linear time fixed dimension LP due to Megiddo, and the complexity for that increases dramatically with dimension, but it remains linear for constant dimension. So that's nice. If you want to realize a rotational radial permutation, that's a little trickier, okay? At first glance, it looks kind of like linear programming, because you can say for each of my pair of, each successive pair of sites in the cyclic permutation, we can create a linear constraint. Like from 2 to 3 here, we say, well, we should be on the left side of that line. And if we can find a point that satisfies all those constraints, basically that requires that the sites be arranged in a star-shaped polygon, then it seems like that should give us a point that realizes the permutation. But the catch is, first of all, a solution of that form might not really be the only way to solve it. Here's an example, okay? This point V realizes the cyclic permutation, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, okay? But it's not even within the convex hull, and it violates this constraint from 1 to 2. So it seems like now we can prove that there's only one such constraint that's violated, because each one corresponds to the distance that we are sweeping, the angle that we sweep through. There can only be one angle that's more than half a circle if they add up to a circle. but it seems like we need to have some kind of solver that tells us the solution to the LP problem while violating at most one constraint. Okay, and there is another catch too, which is that we could satisfy all the constraints and still not have a solution if it circles more than once around. So then it's a matter of putting together the pieces and fixing these little problems. Okay, first of all, we have a lemma that if you can satisfy all the constraints and a solution exists, then any point that satisfies all the constraints must be a solution. So we try to solve the LP problem, and if we get a solution, then we test whether it is whether it has the desired permutation. If it does, we win. And the thing is, if we had a solution to the LP problem and it doesn't satisfy the permutation, then we know there is no realization of that permutation. So again, we're done. Now, if we can't solve the LP problem, then we say we want to solve it with at most one constraint relaxed. Well, we can't afford to try all of them. But the cool thing is that we get a certificate when we find out that the LP problem doesn't work. Okay, Megiddo's algorithm gives us three constraints that conflict with each other. So then we just try those three. We drop out each one of them and try the LP again. And if we can find a solution that way, then we win. And otherwise, we know that there is no realization. And that is basically the result. Now, I have a few thoughts here on conclusions and future work. I've shown you three ways to determine a permutation. It's easy to imagine a few others, such as the line sweep thing. Introduce the realization problem. It's easy for sweep line permutations. For distance permutations, it's linear programming, which isn't trivial, but it's still computationally easy. For radial permutations, it's basically linear programming, but you have a few tricks. You have to try a couple of times and look at your certificate and reconstruct the problem. There are a number of things that you can think of for future work. I'm very interested in doing this in a non-Euclidean geometry. That was really more the point of my earlier work. I wasn't just looking at Euclidean, but also LP norms and other things. You can talk about these other ways of determining a permutation. The robot people had some interesting results on solving navigational goals, like saying, I want to move to a particular site or follow a route around the sites based on these permutations. From the database perspective, you can think about issues like how big are the regions corresponding to the different permutations. And of course, there are all of the combinatoric questions people want to ask about order types. So that concludes my presentation. I believe so, yes. At most D plus one. With the points not in general position there, you can have parallel ones.